Welcome to Season 2 of The Voice Behind the Pen, hosted by author and screenwriter S.C. Dickens. Before we move into this new season, we'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, following, subscribing, rating, and sharing Season 1. Keep sending in your feedback as it helps us get better at delivering a quality show for you all to enjoy. A special thanks to all of the guests from Season 1, Freeze, Tony Hale III, Mark Six Mitchell, Empress Rolanda, William Young, Keith Lakeen Powell, Victor L. Martin, John Alexander, Brianna Cole, and Marcus Massey. Thank you all for coming on and sharing your expertise, mindset, and wisdom. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send SC an email via the email link at www.theauthorscdickens.com. While you're on the site, be sure to check out SC's ghostwriting services and other works on the store page. If you'd like to advertise on the show, or you'd like production work for any of your projects, send me an email at faxtheproducer@gmail.com. That's fax with a Z. So, as usual, kick back, grab whatever your go-to is to let loose, and please enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Voice Behind the Pen podcast. I'm your host, author, and screenwriter, S.C. Dickens. In tonight's episode, I have the honor to have author Keith Kareen Williams, an accomplished author renowned for his thought-provoking and emotional-charged literary work. With a natural talent for storytelling, Keith has mesmerized readers with his ability to craft compelling narratives that explore the depths of human emotion and social issues. From urban fiction to romance, fantasy to contemporary literature, Keith's diverse range of books reflects his pinnacle of unveiling complexity of life, love, and relationships. So join me on a journey through the pages of Keith Williams' diverse rawness and compelling resonance that characterize his writing. As a dedicated writer and storyteller, Keith Kareen Williams continues to captivate audience, inspire reflections and dialogue on the issues that shape our lives. So without further ado, let's welcome Keith Kareen Williams.
Good evening, Keith. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing, brother?
Man, I'm good, man. Hey, listen, I can't complain, you know? And I want to thank you and appreciate you for coming on the show, man. You know, every week, I host the show on Mondays. I host authors. And on Wednesdays, I host someone in the film industry. And with you being an author and today being Monday, I want to get a chance to interview you, man. You
got I appreciate it.
Interesting background, man.
And yes, sir.
Dive a little into that, if you don't mind, man.
Sure.
All right. What inspired you to start writing?
Well, what really happened is, I graduated from high school early, right? So my mom's just like, you know what? Take a year off to just chill. Like, you know, you're a good kid, whatever. Stay out of trouble, though, right? And then I kind of wasn't doing nothing. I'm just outside. And after a while, she said to me, hey, yo, listen, you got to find something to do because you're going to get into trouble, right? So I ended up signing up for City College, took a fiction workshop. I was always a good writer, though. I would win poetry contests. I would win essay contests, storytelling contests. But I never thought about it as a career until I took a fiction workshop. Mm-hmm. And make a long story short, the professor was so impressed with my work. He was like, you pay for school? I was like, yeah, man, I got to hustle out of here to get to my second job. Like, I had two jobs. And going to school because I moved out of my mom's house when I was 19. So okay. He was like, yo, you shouldn't be paying for school. You that talented, right?
Uh-huh.
He even told me my first, you know, the story that I worked on in the workshop, I think my mom's got it somewhere still. He wrote on the top of it, yo, Spike Lee would be jealous of this. Mm. So that kind of planted the bug in my head. And then I used to see my other, you know, classmates who had it. Workshop with me, and they would be like, yo, whatever happened to that book? Whatever happened to that book? Now, fast forward, I took a semester off. My girl got pregnant, put school on hold. But then I said to myself, yo, I don't want to, like, give up on the path that I was doing. Just because I can't afford to go back to school, doesn't mean that I have to stop. So I started researching, you know, self-publishing, and then I self-published my first book. And the crazy thing is, when I self-published my first book, I kind of feel in a way I was a pioneer, because at the time, if you were doing print on demand, people was like, "Ah, oh, you ain't a real publisher. You ain't a real author because you ain't signed to no publishing house." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody else was going a different route, so they didn't really respect print on demand. But I ain't really care, man. I just did things my way because that's the way, you know, I sort of be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I came in the game around print on demand. That was like 2006. That's yeah. when I came in, 2005,
yeah. 2006. Right. And right, exactly, because I published my first book in 04, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was hard because I think all we had was MySpace, Black Planet. And it was hard to market at that time because we really didn't know about algorithm. We didn't know how to market. We didn't know what catchy phrases. We didn't know nothing about hashtags or nothing. You know?
So nothing.
We were like the crash dummies of self-published.
Yeah, that's why, you know, with cats, you know, we the OGs of it. We got the scars. We made all the mistakes. We took all the lumps for everybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I learned a valuable lesson with that too, man, because I was offered an opportunity. I had wrote an erotica for Zane Publishing, Sternenberg. I can't remember the name of the house or whatever, you know, and they took interest in me sending in the first three chapters. But then, you know, the internet wasn't as like it was now. So it's basically you had to talk to an author that was willing to give up the information.
Right.
And I spoke to somebody and I found out the percentage and the money and everything else they were getting from these publishing houses. And at the time, I cut my nose to spite my face. And what I mean by that is I was like, man, I'm not taking that. All that hard work I put into that book, I'm not doing that.
Right.
But then I realized it. Finding somebody to do the book, doing the cover, the printing, the pressing, the production, and everything that went into it, the overlay of the book and the page color and the page count and offsetting the book. It was just so much that I did not take into consideration when they were telling me the price that I would have been getting per book. You know? And I said, you know what? I said, wow, if I'd have took that, no telling where I would have went. Because the exposure she had, because she wound up going to Showtime with her Zane Chronicles.
I remember. Chronicles.
Yeah. Yep.
So Showtime After Dark.
Yes, sir. And I think when I came in the game, nobody knew if Zane was a man or a woman.
Right.
That's how far back I went.
Yeah, because at that time, I don't remember her early on doing any appearances or anything like that. It was just Zane.
Yeah. So how did you approach creating your characters in your first book?
Well, my first book, what happened was, like I said, I was in that workshop and there were no textbooks or anything like that. So the professor was like, look, you guys go home, write, bring in your work, we'll critique it in class. And, you know, that's pretty much the class. Now, like I said, I'm working two jobs to pay for school. And for the first month and a half, I hadn't said a word. I hadn't written anything. I hadn't brought anything in. And I was like, yo, listen. College ain't high school where if you fail, you just go to summer school. If you don't pass, you don't waste money on this class.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So one day I went home and I said, nah, man, I gotta do something. Right. So I started writing at 2:30 in the afternoon. I took off from work that day. I called out sick. I started at 2:30 in the afternoon. I didn't finish till 2:30 in the morning. To this day, that's one of my most epic sessions. And all I did was I sat down and I pretty much freestyled where I'm from. You know, conversations we had, the different dynamics, the situations, you know what I mean? And because I also, some of the books that were out that depict, like, say, urban life. I kind of felt like a lot of them were sensationalized. They felt like soap operas to me, like superhero stories, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's fly, but I wanted to get even more down on the ground level and write about the real people that lived around where I lived at.
Yeah.
Right? So when I put the book out, you know, like, I didn't have the dudes that hustle, that's flying, you know, got private planes and yachts, because I ain't know nobody like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The cats that I know that hustle, to us, them being able to cop a Benz, that's a big deal. But they still live in the building up the block from me. You feel me? That's what I can relate to. So I was like, yo, man, I'm going to just write about that. Right? But I wrote about it not just on a surface level. I got deep into their personalities and why they do what they do and why they were who they were. And what happened was I didn't create like these cardboard cutouts of, yo, this character's a villain, this guy's a good guy. No, because you're all a little bit of both, right? So when people would read the book, they really fell in love with the characters, because I'm big on that. Characterization is important when you're telling stories, right?
Yeah.
Even if some people focus so much on, let's say, the protagonist, that the outside players or the side characters, you know, it leaves the story feeling hollow. It's just like if you look at Batman and the Joker, right?
Yeah.
Batman, every hero is only as ill or as great as his adversary. Right? Yes. Otherwise, Batman would just be a crazy dude in a bat suit running around beating up crooks. But the villain created a dynamic that make it interesting. You know what I mean? That's why I feel like, you know, like even a character like Superman, a movie with Superman just stopping bank robberies, that's boring. You knew that the villains never had a chance.
Yeah.
But when you create a real test for him, that's how you make your stories dynamic. And also, I try to create even characters that are quote-unquote unlikable, but they're relatable.
Yeah.
You might not like them, but you understand them. So I just always encourage authors to really get deep and make sure that your characters are like real people, even if they do the wrong thing sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You discuss a moment or event that deeply influenced one character in specific?
All right. Well, the couple, I'll say, from my second book, Open Spaces, that's like the book, like when I released that, a lot of people were like, oh, you live in my house? Like, how do you? And what it is that was a real personal story to me. Not necessarily the things that happened between the characters, but just the overall sentiment and what the couples was going through, because I was going through that at the same time in my own personal life, right? Because my first book was 2004. I didn't put out my second until 2010.
Mm.
And that's because my life was in turmoil. I was breaking up with my kid's mom, ended up being a single dad. You know what I mean? And then I would say that breakup, it made me sit back and reflect. And it changed. I think I grew up through that, where you have these ideas about what you think life is going to be like. And then all of a sudden you find out, oh no, it ain't like that. Right?
Yeah.
And so people see also the maturity from the first book to the second. So I would say that event, me and her breaking up and everything that came with it, I would say I didn't feel like a grown man until that happened. Hmm. Right? And then I took the feelings and everything that happened, and I put it into that book. So I created those two characters. And the crazy thing about it is years later, like me and her, you know, we cool. We was never like, there's times where it's hatred, but it wasn't consistent. We pretty much been cool since, right?
Yeah.
And she read the book, or she started to. And she told me, I can't read this book. And I was like, wow, what happened? And what it basically is that in those pages, she recognized that I understood when things that she didn't think I understood, like how she was feeling, right?
Yeah.
Because I was able to write it. And also, it made her actually listen to me. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of writing, bro. When you write, there's no back and forth debate, right?
Yeah.
There's no opportunity for a person to jump in and say, but, or to defend this. Or, nah. When you write and it's there, they have no choice but to really take in what you're saying. So I would say that life event is what sparked the creation of those two characters, Mika and Sidari, in that book. And that's the book where I feel like I really grew up.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Now, with that being so long ago that you put it out, do you mm-hmm. think that you would pick it up and revise it? Because author made a statement the other day that I found very interesting. And I realized through my writing, I have evolved as a writer. He said sometimes when you write a book and you leave it on a shelf long enough, that character has generated growth.
Yeah.
So when you go back to it, you'd be like, yo, you know what? I could touch this up. I could touch this up. Or do you think that you would put out another book to address his growth?
The growth, right.
Yeah.
Great question, because recently I just realized that my first book was it's the 20-year anniversary this year, which is crazy to me. I can't believe it, right?
Yeah.
So what I did is I went back into it. And I did a hardcover version, 20th anniversary edition, right?
Yeah.
And when I went back into it, I didn't change the story. Just, you know, certain places where I felt like I wasn't clear, I touched up, but I left the characters the same. I'm the type of author that I think before I would go back and, like, say, redo a book,
yeah,
I'd rather do another story and show you how the character is different or how they evolve. Because those characters from those earlier books, that's one of the tricks I use, too, that my readers kind of like it. Well, they not kind of, they like it. Every now and then, I might surprise you with a character from another book, somewhere else, that'll pop up in another story as, like, kind of like a crossover. You know what I mean? They might make a cameo and just walk into a tattoo shop to get some ink. Or, you know what I mean? So I like to do things like that. So, and that also gives me the opportunity to revisit characters that readers will ask me questions about. Because when you do your thing with a book, readers always want a sequel. They always did more. And sometimes they don't understand that with certain stories and certain books and certain characters, you kind of said what you wanted to say.
Yeah.
And that's it. Right?
Yeah.
You don't want to spoil it. It's like cooking. You cook and you taste, you're like, I need a little bit more salt. You throw that salt and it's over. Now you spoiled it.
Yeah.
So sometimes you got to, as a creator, you got to know, you have to know within your heart when to stop.
Okay. Now, you said that, you know, it was your ex, you said, that read the book and she couldn't read anymore.
Yeah.
Now, how did you feel knowing that you were able to capture a woman? And how did you know that you would be able to capture her on paper as well as you did?
I listen. Like, people, a lot of times, that's an important skill to have as an author, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to listen, and you have to have empathy to be able to relate to other people.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's how you're able to create characters that they're not you. You wouldn't do anything like that, or you wouldn't move that way, but you understand, though, and you understand. I would say the human condition. So you're able to create, you know, you're able to create characters that are nothing like you, the opposite sex or from a different culture, but you have enough empathy and you pay close enough attention that you're able to do it and create believable characters. Like, since the pandemic, I've been taking on, you know, ghostwriting jobs, right?
Yeah.
So, I interview the client. And sometimes I send him back a chapter. Like, I have a guy who was in tears. Sent him back a chapter. And he was like, I can't believe you. I didn't, because he didn't tell me that much. But I understand people.
Yeah.
So when I described it, I put it into words in a way that he wasn't able to. So that's just having empathy, paying attention. And if you pay attention and you really take it serious to flesh out your characters, like, If anytime I talk to aspiring authors, I tell them, do not create these tropes, these cardboard characters, these, you know, cut and paste characters. Take your time. and flesh out your characters.
So you would advise an upcoming author to do research on the character or write about what they know?
Absolutely. Write about what you know. Mm-hmm. And if you're stepping outside of what you know, do research. This era, we have the internet, right? There is no excuse for not doing research. You don't want to go through 50 books to do your research? Man, get online and watch videos and listen to other interviews, watch documentaries. However you get it, do your research. Because the thing that separates classics, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter the genre, whether it's classic fantasy, classic romance, classic thrillers, classic science fiction. The science fiction, what makes it a classic? It's not the spaceships and the lasers and the science. It's the humanity of the story. That's what you'll find in every single classic book that stands the test of time, is that people pick it up and it's relatable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The things that these characters go through, because we're all human, right?
Yeah.
So the story could have took place in the Soviet Union. You could pick it up. And if it's a hood in Russia, trust me, it mirrors a hood in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
They just speak a different language.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So just that's what separates a classic. You don't want your stories lost in where they don't remember the title. They don't remember the characters. They don't remember the author. The only way to do that is to be unique. So you have to take your own experience. Don't write like your favorite author. You can borrow things from them, but you don't want to mirror them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was dope. That was definitely dope information, because a lot of people get stuck into the hype of, oh, I know how drug dealers do this, and I know how people do this. They assume they know because they're always watching shows like Power, you know, and all these other shows that glorify it,
right. But
they have no idea that that's not how it works.
Right. And why would you sit down and write another Power? There's already a Power.
Yeah.
Right. And every story, just like all of our lives, are unique. We all listen, all stories follow certain patterns, because that's just how life works.
Yeah.
Because all we're doing is just transcribing life, right? Whether it's fiction or nonfiction, we just telling what we see.
Yeah.
What's important for all of you to do is look at things with a unique take on it, right?
Yeah.
And so as long as you're being yourself, don't try to copy the success that this show had. Because you're just going to be just... Hollywood is going through the same thing sometimes when they revamp these old franchises, right?
I just talk about that. Go ahead, I'm listening.
Right, and they flop because what's happening is, it's basically when they make those moves, it's money-driven, right?
Yes.
So it's like, okay, we already have this established, beloved franchise. If we put out a movie, they're banking on a built-in fan base.
Yeah.
Right? All right, we had the Ghostbusters. We know this is a classic, right? So we know that if we put this out in the theaters, it's going to bring in X amount of people. But then they don't put a new spin on it. They don't take into account that, yo, sometimes certain films belong in an era, right?
Yeah.
They caught fire because they came out at just the right time. It was meant to be.
Yeah.
Don't go digging up the bones of these old stories and trying to remix it and give us this. No, it's not. Listen, creativity, and this is what I want to tell authors too. You won't reach your full potential if you're not being brave.
Yeah.
Right? Every time I put out a book, yes, I know certain things that my audience likes to see in my books, but I don't let that drive me. I write what I want to write, win, lose, or draw. Right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it matters that I'm happy with what I put out. That's the story I wanted to tell. That's how I wanted to tell it. I hope y'all like it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you start listening to the outside noise, or when you start trying to chase what somebody else did, you start to lose yourself. And if you're not unique, you won't stand out. If you don't stand out, you cut down your chances of being successful drastically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So
now, with that being said, you being a self-published author and you have a success that you had, would you consider signing with a label?
Absolutely.
Imprint?
Absolutely. When I first, and it's been the same, I felt the same way from when I first started to now, right? I started self-publishing just because when I started studying the business structure of the publishing houses, I knew that I was good enough to get published by a traditional publisher, but some of my stories are so unique, I think they wouldn't exactly be sure how to market it because I cross genres, I mix and match genres, my style is really unique, right? So I don't fit into some of the boxes, right? They can't say, well, this is just radical or this is just this. I don't fit. So I said, all right, I'm going to do it myself. That way, I don't have to get 500 rejection letters and feel like I'm not good enough. I know I am. I just got to do it myself.
Yeah.
So, but what would make me sign with a publisher is not just the upfront check, right?
Uh-huh.
What I would be more concerned with is sitting down with a publisher and I want to hear what their marketing plan is for me.
Gotcha.
How are you going to get me in front of more people than I'm currently able to get in front of on my own right now?
Yeah.
And if I like their marketing, if I like the marketing plan and they can make it happen, I'm with it. But that's the most important thing to me is to build my name, which is my brand.
Yeah.
So definitely, I definitely would.
And I think a lot of authors don't realize that, you know, like, you know, sometimes I have authors come up here and they might curse. And I say, hold up. I say, right. Oh, I'm sorry for cursing on your show. I say, hold up. I'm not. Right. You're a writer. I'm a writer. Right. I understand how that goes. If you feel like you got to express yourself, then you got to do as you curse. Right. And that's what you do. You know, if that's what you choose to do, you know.
Yeah. Your brand. One. All right. Back. My first Harlem Book Fair. I just had my first book at that time. And I forgot what year it was, but I think it was around 2008, 2009. At the table next to me was Kawan and J.M. Benjamin, right? So they were getting awards in the Schomburg. And to my left, there was an author named Moody Holiday. So this time, it's my first event, really my first big one, sitting behind my table chilling. So Moody Holiday said, she called me, she said, come here, young man. I said, hey, man, how you doing? She said to me, you plan to sell them books on your table? I said, yeah. She said, well, you better get from behind that table and start interacting with people and, you know, greeting people and saying hello. She said, because when Quan and Jam come back, the energy is going to be crazy over there. You're going to get lost in the shuffle. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
So when Jam, I always salute him because he was one of the first authors that was cool. I met another author, who ain't gonna name, and he was so weird and not even weird. He was so, asshole-ish, right?
Yeah, I know exactly.
I was like, nah, I ain't messing with none of these cats. Nah, I'm good, right? Because where I'm from, that's how we are. Like, we kind of stick to ourselves already anyway. Like, I ain't messing with these dudes. But anyway, something told me he seemed like a cool dude. So I said to JM, yo, what advice you would give a new author? He said to me, oh, man, bro. I love rookies. He said, let me tell you what you do. He said, yo, be yourself. He said, before people even listen to what's in your book, they got to rock with you.
Yeah.
He said, they'll support you because you're you. After that, they'll take your book and be like, wow, and he's a dope writer.
Yeah.
And I said, got it, right? So I'm always me. Like when I go to events and readers meet me for the first time, they go, wow, you just, yup. It's just like how I've been surviving all these years. I don't even depend on the internet sometimes because the internet is fickle. Sometimes it goes, sometimes it don't. But one thing I know is when I go outside and I take my table and I take my books outside, I'm going to move books.
Yeah.
I could do this anywhere. I've been doing this for a minute, right?
Uh-huh.
So for me, going to a book event is easy because these people came here for books.
Yeah.
Right? Going on the street and selling books to people who don't want books, that's trickier. But how you do it, it's not about trying to sell them a book. Listen, I'm an author. I'm out here promoting my work. Most people, that right there gets them interested. You wrote these books? Because they'll see you and think that you just out there just selling random books. No. I published all of these.
Yeah.
And they will buy the book just to support and then find out, wow, you are dope, and come back and support. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as an author, especially as an independent, I tell independent authors all the time, listen, it don't stop. You have to be on it constantly. If your barbershop, when you go get your hair cut, yo, all of them barbers should have copies of your book.
Mm-hmm.
That barber should let you be able to tell people when you're in there, hey, yo, this is an author. Yo, you should check them out. Or check, you know what I mean? Check out, whatever.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this. If I'm doing business with you, you should do business with me.
Exactly. That's
we should just be moving. To the ladies, you going and getting your nails done. You getting your hair done. Yo, when you going in, you putting them bundles and you getting them nails done, you should be able to promote your work in there too.
Yeah.
You're doing business with them, they should do business with you.
Yeah.
Right? Yo, if I go to the gas station, I'm pumping my gas and somebody's next to me. Hey, yo, you read? Why you ask? I'm an author. You want to check out one of my books? For real? Sure. You have to, because when you're independent, then this is especially for independent authors, right? You have to make it go. If you don't make it go, nobody else is going to make it go.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Let me tell you something, man. So, I'm laughing because when I started in 2006, my first book fair was the Harlem Book Fair.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I had a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
I did, but I want to say it was Life Changing Books was the company that Tiffany Montgomery was with. I knew Tiffany from Raleigh, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
And Tiffany was out there. It was a couple of other people, you know, I exchanged numbers and stuff. And I know exactly who you was talking about because they was around that time too. They were acting strange and weird.
Yeah, man. So
I know exactly who you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, but to piggyback off of what you said, there was a restaurant in Raleigh, North Carolina called Lee's Kitchen. My books was in there. Right.
Nice.
There was a barbershop in Fuquay Varina, North Carolina. My book was in the barbershop, Mims Barbershop. Right. So everybody I knew, the nightclubs, it was Black Ties, it was the Star Bar, all of the owners of those clubs, I pumped my books to them. They let me sell my books in their lobbies. You understand what I'm saying? And plus, I was working with some of them. And for some of them, I had books in my trunk. I started a guerrilla marketing campaign. What I did was, I don't know if you remember the Postnets, but I went to the Postnets and had them print off some flyers, right?
Nice.
I put the flyers in envelopes and mailed them out to different prisons, right? Now, I'm getting ready to give everybody some free game on some guerrilla marketing that I personally did, and it worked. I sent out five of them, and I put a number on them, right? And I told the inmate, I wrote them a letter and say, listen, if you give these out and five of these return back to me, I'll send you a book complimentary with another flyer of my other book. And if you get rid of those flyers, I'll give you another book. And each book, I would put flyers in it, right? So that's how I started my first marketing campaign. My second marketing campaign, I used to go to Barnes & Noble and look around. And I said, you know what? Those flyers, I took them. And I would take, and I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble by Barnes & Noble, but I don't do it no more. So, but I used to take my flyers, right? Mm-hmm. And I would find the genres that I wrote, and I'd stick those in the back of the books in Barnes & Nobles.
Yo, bro, I'm about to go do that next week.
So listen, even if it fell out, people would pick it up and either put it on the counter or slide it back in the book. Right. I wind up getting a book signing in a library in Raleigh, North Carolina. I still got the flyer to it to this day. Nice. I went to the library in Wake County of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, I said, when do you guys do y'all budget for y'all books? Mm-hmm. So they broke it down, said, oh, yeah, we do the budget this time, this, that, and the third, but you just missed it. All right, no problem. I have a box of books. How many libraries do you have? And I think it was like 23 or 33 books. I mean, 33 libraries in Wake County. So mm-hmm. I said, if I gave you two books for each library, would y'all put them in it?
Right.
And sure enough, did. So what I did was I had all my friends call up that was in different parts of Wake County, call up the library, ask about my book.
Ask for the books.
So yep. my name would be in their computer.
That's right.
You understand
right.
what I'm saying? But I had got away from the game for a while. And mm-hmm. so when I returned, they was like, oh, yeah, now nah, we're doing our system different now. You know, all those old authors or whatever, those if you haven't written anything or whatever, is kicked out of the system. So I came mm-hmm. up with another guerrilla marketing that I'll share with you off the air.
Yeah.
I don't want, because I was like, yo, you know, I always had to think outside the box. You know,
yeah, man.
You have to struggle as a self-published author.
Yes. Yes.
And nobody realized it. You know, like Master P started the whole thing off with selling the DVDs in the trunk of the car.
Yep.
So he basically fathered that style for everybody. So if mm-hmm. you're a published author, you better hustle. You better know
better
how to hustle. You understand what I'm saying? And that's
mm-hmm.
what I had to learn. I had to learn that my books are not going to be in these stores because I self-published it. Nobody knows I exist. So I have to make people know I exist. And this mm-hmm. is only piggybacking off of your statement. Which is
yeah.
true.
Yeah, it's true. Listen, I have people who I'm out selling my books, and they'll say to me, are you in the bookstores? And I always tell them, I am the bookstore, sis. Whatever I decide, like, yo, yeah. And another trick I'm going to teach authors right now, right? The obvious thing would be to take your books to, like, a shopping area where a busy area, right?
Uh-huh.
And it could work. But I kind of feel like the busy areas is for, like, seasoned vets who know how to do it, right?
Yeah.
If you're not outgoing, if that's not your personality, like, because you have to draw attention to yourself if you're going to go there, because you compete with the stores. You compete with the sneaker store. You compete with McDonald's. You compete with everything else that somebody came on that busy app to spend money on, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have that type of personality, or if you're not ready to do that yet, it's all right. Find yourself a little block, we have light foot traffic, and believe it or not, those light blocks, you still get the sales, because guess what? There's nothing else going on that block but you.
Yeah.
Right? Ain't nothing else there but you. Just make sure you have your promo material, you have your banner, you have, you know, your little thing set up nice, and people will pass by, show interest. And one more trick, too, even though I know it might seem a little backwards to some people because people want to hand out business cards and stuff like that. Hand out a business card or a flyer as a last resort. Don't have them out there for people to just take and keep it moving, because you're giving them an easy out to not interact with you, right?
Yeah.
I always push my books. I don't have no flyers out. I don't have no business cards, right? That's a last resort. Like, if somebody, I really see they not gonna purchase a book, then I'll be like, all right, look, take this card with you, right? But don't make it readily available for them, because they'll choose that just to get away from you. You know what I mean? It's about having conversations and branding yourself and explaining to people why you decided to write books. What is, you know, what drives you, your reason for doing it, your whys. The people who relate to you and rock with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're seeing the role that technology plays, right? Mm-hmm. How do you think it shapes the future of literature? And I'm asking that because I had an interesting conversation with another writer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was against print or ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're gonna eliminate books in general?
No. I get it with music to a degree, right? Where, you know, you ain't got a million CDs and you have access to all the music you want to listen to. But a song, your average song is about, what, 5 minutes? And now it's even getting shorter. So you're figuring between 3 to 5 minutes per song, right?
Yeah.
I get it where you want to have access to your entire music library, but you observing a song or album might just take you an hour. Books are a little different, right? In an average day, you might listen to, depending on how long your drive is or how long or what you're doing, you can listen to 50 songs. You're not going through 50 books. You know what I mean? You're not shuffling through different books. It's kind of different, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, the ebooks, it does cut down on the amount of hard copies that you have. But I just feel like readers, a lot of readers still want the feel of a book in their head, right? They still want to see your book up on a shelf. With that being said, you still can't ignore the ebooks and the digital marketplace.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I would recommend to everybody, you have your product available in both. Now with me, even when the ebook era took off and people was like, yo, how you still selling paperbacks? One, I'm still providing value, right?
Yeah.
I'm not cranking out little, it's about the quality of what you're doing, right? The same way like vinyl, we've been past vinyl, right? But aren't there classic records that people is like, yo, I'm going to keep a record player just to play that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's also about if someone is going to take the money and go through the trouble of ordering a paperback, just make sure that the quality is up there so they know what they spent their money on and they appreciate it. Another thing that I was doing when the ebooks really took off is the reason why people still kept getting paperbacks from me is because in all my years, right, pretty much like say you go on my website or you contact me and you order a paperback from me, I've never written the same note twice. So I've established, I always tell people, like, I don't really have fans. I have supporters. There's a difference, right? I build relationships with my audience, right?
Yeah.
So because of that, they don't even lend out their books. They'll buy two copies from me. One that they know I signed to them, and the other one, if somebody, oh, can I borrow that? They'd be like, yeah, hey, you can borrow that. But they will not give up the autographed copy. Because
yeah.
I'm not just scribbling thanks for your support, right? I'm in that book like, yo, you know, I'm letting them know I remember when we met. I remember the conversation. I remember what led to you buying this book. Yo, I appreciate it, enjoy it, and I'm signing it.
Yeah.
So because I put those notes in the book, it makes it more of a novelty for the reader, right? And it's my way of showing my appreciation.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So that's how come I still keep moving. And the books that readers are like that. Like, yeah, they'll get the digital copy to be on the go. But for my books, if they get a digital copy, it's more so, all right, they're going on vacation. They don't want to carry the paperback and take up too much space. I'm going to get a digital copy, too, so I can continue reading the book while I'm on vacation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't think it'll ever completely eliminate paperbacks. But, you know, because it's just a different thing than music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's different from music.
Yeah. So, okay, now we're talking about people going on vacation and they thinking that it's just too much to carry a hardback or whatever. I get the digital. What do you think about the audio?
Audio is big. Audio is big. Like, that's something that I've been neglecting for a minute. And it's my New Year's resolution to get my audiobooks going because, yo, a lot of people spend a lot of time in their cars commuting. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to do something else and just listen. So audiobooks is huge, but for me, I'm the type of person, man, before I jump into anything, I want to do it and do it my way.
Yeah.
So that's why I haven't jumped into it yet, because there's a whole bunch of production that go along with how I want to do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's definitely huge. It's huge. It's huge. Because, like I said, you don't always want to listen to, it's the same thing like how podcasts exploded, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to just listen to music. There's only been so much music you can listen to so many times, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people want to listen, you know, to conversations, to stories while they drop or whatever have you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it, use. You can't, as an author, you cannot neglect audiobooks in this current marketplace. You have to find a way to get that done.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know what's crazy? The fact that you said that, you know, you can listen but to so much music when you're traveling or whatever. When I'm driving, and I've been like this for years, I don't even listen to music. My car is completely silent.
Right.
And I've had friends and family get in the car and I'm like, yo, dude, why you don't never have music on? I said, you know why? Because music, for one, I don't want to hear somebody sing about a problem that I done went through or I'm going through or I'm trying to figure it out. Let me figure it out on my own.
But quiet.
What you going to say? I'm sorry.
Quiet. Because you know why that is? Because you're creative.
Yeah.
Quiet is important for creative people. You need to be with your own thoughts. You know what I mean? Without outside influence.
Yeah.
Right? I tell people all the time, like, sometimes I alternate. Sometimes I'll write with music playing. Mm. Right? I do. Just kind of like to block out everything else that I don't want to hear. Yeah. Right? Because I'm in New York. Yeah. I don't want to hear outside. Right? It's distracting. So, yeah, I'll play music, but when I edit in silence.
Yeah.
I edit in silence because I need to hear myself.
Yeah.
Right? I need to hear my own thoughts. And sometimes, this is why sometimes people don't realize that you get in the shower, right? And you have some of your best ideas in there. Why? This is quiet.
Let me tell you something, man. So with me saying that, I drive in silence. When I first started writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
For one, I was going through something. I was going through a situation with a marriage, you know. Okay. And I found silence to writing, right? Yep. I would go places. I don't know if you remember the T-Mobile Sidekick.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So I would go someplace, or I would have like one of the little. Remember the little small? They were like flumpy, but they were kind of small. The laptops. But they were like hard. If you dropped it, you good.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
I used to carry one of them, or I get on my Sidekick and I'd sit somewhere. I might be in a club, listen to music, and I start typing away, writing away. And everybody walk up to me, be like, "Yo, who are you texting?" And I'm saying to myself, "Nah, I'm writing a story, you know." And I tell them, I said, "Yo, I need this, you know." But when I'm writing now, it really depends.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? With what I need in my background. And that's what I was going to ask you next, was like, what does your writing area look like? But you just already went into that.
It's a mess, bro. I couldn't believe it. I took a picture the other day because this is my process, right?
Uh-huh.
I worked with another author. We co-wrote a book called Blood and Vengeance, Keith Gaston.
Mm-hmm.
And as contemporaries and peers, you know, we bounce ideas back and forth. And I always struggle with over editing, right?
Yeah.
I used to be one of those authors that'll spend a whole afternoon on a page just trying to get it right.
Yeah.
He said to me, "Yo, stop doing that. Stop self-editing. Just let it go. And then when you get back into it, you go, you know, then you polish it up and you fix it." So I also tell authors that I can't remember the last time I had writer's block. I don't.
Yeah.
And the trick to that is I pretty much have about 3 projects going at the same time at all times.
Mm.
Right? I have 2 books and a screenplay. I keep it like that. Sometimes it's 4. Sometimes it's 2 books and 2 screenplays going at the same time. But what I do is I always like to know where my book is going to end. I actually start whatever story, I know where it's going to end.
Yeah.
That makes it easier because now I'm just working towards that end. How do we get there? Right? Unless I'm really in a hurry, I write my book first. Then when I take the handwritten stuff and I type it up, what I get onto my computer is actually a second draft, because as I'm typing up what I wrote by hand, I'm actually editing it as well.
Yeah.
Right? Making little changes. Then what I do is when I got the whole book, because I don't write like beginning, middle, end anymore. What I do, as these scenes come to me or different events, I just snatch a notebook and just write it out. And that's why I don't get writer's block, because what'll make you get writer's block is you hit a scene and you don't feel like writing it, or you don't know what to do with it. That doesn't mean you don't know what to do with the story. It's just at this point, you don't know what to do with this right here. So I write whatever I'm in the mood for out of that book. Sometimes I had a sex scene, bro. I might not be in the mood to write a sex scene for a week. Right? I'll skip over and do something else and come back to it. So because I create in that type of chaos, I'm able to be consistent. I don't get stuck. But to answer that question, bro, my desk, I'm at my desk right now. It's a mess. But, you know, that's not everybody's process. Some people like to be neat and organized. I've seen authors with spreadsheets, with highlighted sections. You know what I mean? It's whatever. As long as you're doing the work, whatever makes you flow and put out the best product, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying these interviews with the different authors, people in the movie industry, because it's like some of the things you think you crazy for doing, some of them will give you another way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I find it interesting, everybody's thought process, you know?
Yeah.
I've always been big on people's thought process. Like, what makes a person think this? How do you see this? And I see this. The same thing, but you think this and I think that, you know. I've always been interested in that. Now, with that being said, right, how was the journey teaming up with another author to do a book?
I'll tell you, it depends on, well, first, and this is important, your personalities to a certain extent. First of all, you gotta, as an author, just in general, generally speaking, you gotta be thick skinned. Period.
Yeah,
sure. You ain't gonna survive this if you have a fragile spirit. You just not. Right?
Yeah.
When I collaborated with Keith Gaston, we came up with a concept. So yeah, this will make a book. And what happened was we decided, okay, he would write from one character's perspective, and I would write from another's, right? And then halfway through the book, we started being able to write each other's characters. So now that when we put when the book came out, anytime we've done interviews about it, the readers can't tell who wrote what. They always get it wrong.
Yeah.
So it's a thing and the crazy part about it is he and I never spoke on the phone while we were working on this book. We never spoke.
Wow.
But what happened is, I would write a chapter, he would write a chapter, and we just went back and forth like that, like two rappers on a song. Uh-huh. Back and forth, right? And so when we did the first online interview with a book club, that's the first time me and him had ever been on the phone together. That's the thing where collaboration sometimes, a couple things is important. One, you have to respect each other.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You have to respect the other person's style, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Or skill set, right? Because otherwise, you're going to second guess them all the time.
Yeah.
And it's going to lead to conflict and friction. And it's not that writer isn't good or you aren't good. Yo, you just, it takes chemistry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It takes chemistry. So, it's important if you're going to collaborate on something to find somebody that you have creative chemistry with. Not personality necessarily, you know, but creative chemistry with your styles could mesh, or you respect what they do and they respect what you do. And also the thick skin part comes in where sometimes they're going to criticize something. And the reason why I say the respect part is important is because you may write something and the person collaborating with you be like, well, my character would never do that, or I don't think this is, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to be able to look at it objectively and not get in your feelings.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're right. Right? So that's important. Collaborating is not easy. There's authors that wanted to collaborate with me, and I will collaborate with any and everybody, and it's not because they aren't good. Let me just say that. It's not that you're not good. It's just creatively, I don't think our styles would mesh. Or sometimes I don't know you well enough to know how our working relationship will go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's important. I don't want to be, because listen, we creators, right? So yeah. A lot of times our mood is important to what we're going to do. You can't collaborate with somebody that you find annoying or obnoxious or your personal, you know what I mean? It's not going to work. So there has to be some type of chemistry between y'all for that to work out.
Yeah, I did. So when I first started, right, started off with 7 short stories. I threw it in the book just to see if people, you know, like my storytelling ability. So my next, well, it wasn't my next book, but the project that I took on was with an author named Toya McCray. And it was our agreement. It was about a guy and a girl. Whatever took place between them, took place between them, and let's create. I started the first part of it.
Right.
And say them what direction she wanted to go. I didn't care. Then she would write. Then when she gave it back to me, I would take it whatever direction. And we played off of each other's direction that we went. And I think it was a pretty good book. You know?
Yeah, man.
It's a novel. You know, it's called Bringing It From the Streets to the Sheets. Erotica. And I got a couple of other novels that I wrote that I'm putting out under different names as well. Got When Crossing a Blue Thin Line. A female cop that gets into an affair with a married woman. Then I got another one, Till Death Do Us Part, but I'm going to change the name. I forgot the name that I was going to change, but I wrote a couple of different names. It's about a marriage counselor. He takes 5 couples on an island, and he gives them the right to kill each other, but all of them are connected. Everybody is connected. So only 2 people can leave that island, a husband and a wife, 2 husbands or 2 wives. And it don't your husband or your wife.
So
they have to expose a deep, dark secret that marriage counselor knows. He lets them
kill. That's what I'm talking about.
So that's why, and I tell everybody, when people say, yo, what genre you write? I say, yo, I can write anything. I can write thriller. I can write, I have a one called The Kwasi Dasi. It's about a serial killer. You know, I can write anything. You put a pen and paper in my hand and I can make it happen.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
My question to you is, do you have other pen names? And if so, would you tell us? And if not, it's cool.
At this point, no. But I was thinking about maybe changing, using a pen name. Not so much a pen name, but a variation of my name. For my fantasy novels. But then again, you know, they've been selling anyway. But that's interesting. And I always like to listen and I understand it why authors use pen names, because it's part of branding. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want to be known. This author is known for this. Yeah. I thought about it and I might, but right now I don't. I mean, I've both written books, but I don't use a pen name. And I was worried about that at first because I noticed, like, my first, when I first started to really get momentum, is when a publisher approached me to write a short story for their anthology. I wrote it, and the only thing, I'll write for publishers for free. Like, yo, I'll write the story for you, but just my only stipulation back then, because I always knew how important exposure was, look, at the back of my story, just put my name, my contact information, and my other book. And we look. So when they read that story, they were like, wow, this guy, who's this? And so I started writing more of it.
Yeah.
You know, more erotica. And then I was a kid that grew up reading comic books, man. I'm a comic book head. I'm in the middle of the hood on a block and dudes is on the stoop next to me selling crack and I'm reading the X-Men. You know what I mean? So I always wanted to, you know, tell those type of stories as well.
Yeah.
So when I wrote a book titled Cursed Immortals, The Tower of Seven. And I was nervous to release it because, you know, my readers are used to like my romance or my erotic or my urban dramas or my thrillers.
Mm-hmm.
When I put that out, I didn't know, even though I had a successful series before, that was the Lord of Those Names called War Angel. When I put that out though, Cursed Immortals, man, I went to Chicago, last year. And the discussion that we had with Chi-Town Reading Circle, the book club, it was crazy. And I just want to tell anybody, let me say this real quick. Anybody that's sitting down and you might be working on your first book and you're nervous, yo, listen, man, just put your heart into it. Put your effort into it. Don't be lazy, right? Because you get one chance to make a first impression, right? Take the time to get the cover design, get a nice cover. Take the time to have the book, you know, standard looking good, right?
Yeah.
And just know that there's not a lot of feelings that could top that feeling when you get in a room with people who read your work and you guys really have a deep discussion on what you wrote.
Yeah.
And it feels good for your ego.
Yeah.
But also when you, the feeling that the value that you brought to other people's lives.
Yeah.
And you see how invested they are in it. Yo, bro, a lady who came to the discussion, she had a whole journal full of notes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that feeling that you are part of someone else's or other people's lives. Oh man, it's the closest thing to me being in like say Madison Square Garden and tearing it down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Being a musician. So, you know, just if at any time anybody that's working on your first book, you know, just know that that's at the end of the that's what's waiting for you at the end of all of this.
Definitely, man. So I want to share something real quick, and then we're going to close out.
Yes, sir.
The only reason why I went with a different pen name for each genre that I write is I had an experience. I wrote a book, right, and I was working at a camp.
Yes.
And one of the parents said, you know, she said, oh, I didn't know you wrote books. And I was like, yeah, I do. So she was like, do you have any? So I said, yeah. I said, she said, I have a Christian book club.
Yeah.
I said, ooh. I said, well, it's urban. I said, but I do have a Christian book.
Yeah.
I said, I just ain't finished it yet. It's called Pastor Thug. And she was like, nah, you know, we'll read what you got or whatever. So story short, she read it. They was turned off.
Right. Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, exactly. So with the pen name thing, that's the thing, because I actually didn't even think about it like that until I got into the industry and started actually doing the work. Because I know, like say, Stephen King, right? Let's not even say him. There are other authors. So when I always saw them use pen names, I always thought it was a way to, like, say they contractually obligated to this publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it was just a way for them to publish something else somewhere else.
Yeah.
But once I got into the industry and I started to understand it more, I understand why authors do it, because it's not always a good thing for people to not be able to differentiate.
Yeah.
Because even in terms of erotica, I learned a lesson, because even in that genre, some things that I was considering erotica, they was telling me, oh no, baby, that's just romance. I'm like, okay. Right? So there's levels, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There were books that I thought was erotic. I'm like, oh yeah, this is erotica. And then reading back, I'm like, yo, listen, this book was dope. The love scenes were great, but this is not erotica, baby. And I'm like, okay. So there's levels. So I understand it in terms of you might want to call yourself something different just so that the reader understands that what to expect when they pick this up.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
In closing, can you give everybody your information, how they can reach out to you, how they can purchase your book, your social media, or email you?
All my social media, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, all of it, you'll find me at Ream After Dark, R-E-E-M After Dark, one word. I'll tell you something else I used to do real quick. I got the Reem After Dark handle because I used to be on Twitter back in the days, right? Heavy. So they used to do a thing called Twitter After Dark. Hashtag. That's when I started learning about hashtags. Yeah. So I used to take the Twitter After Dark hashtag, which was always something erotic, something spicy, you know what I mean, something raunchy, and I would put little pieces from my books. But I had to get creative with it because, remember, Twitter was only 140 characters.
Yeah.
So when I started doing that, I started getting follows, and people like, oh, where you got that from? I'm like, oh, that's my book. So that's where I got the Reem After Dark from. So that's how you can find me online. You want to find my books? Keith Kareem Williams on Amazon. Everything is there.
All right, man. Yo, again, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, and, man. It's a pleasure, man.
Thank you again for coming on the show, man. We've been playing a little bit of tag. There's a couple of y'all I've been playing tag with. But thanks again, man.
Yeah, man. Anytime.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is another episode of Voice Behind the Pen. This is your host, author and screenwriter, S.E. Dickens. Good night, everyone.
Good night.